Hi, I'm Tedra Meyer, Vermont Edition producer, and I wanted to let you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela LaFrac. Today, we're talking public transit. From the return of bus fares in Chittenden County to a new microtransit project starting up in southern Vermont. Transit officials at the local and statewide level are trying to figure out how to improve public transit in this state, to help people get around, and to help the state reach its climate goals by reducing emissions from cars. Now, earlier today, Green Mountain Transit's board voted to reinstate fare increases as part of its budget for the coming year. The only way fare increases could be avoided is if Vermont's legislature decides to put state funds toward it. Now, our first guest today is John Moore, the Assistant General Manager at Green Mountain Transit. It serves Chittenden County as well as the Capital District around Montpelier, Franklin and Grand Isle counties, Stowe and Lamoille County, and the Mad River Valley. John, welcome.
Hi, Michaela. Thanks for having us.
Now, John, COVID obviously did not have very many good sides, but in a way, it did make the bus more accessible for many Vermonters. Buses in Chittenden County have been free since the pandemic started, thanks to this big influx of pandemic-related funds. Can you tell us a little bit about like what the situation has been with bus fares in Chittenden County and what might be about to change?
Sure. So early in the pandemic, for a safety measure, understanding that if we didn't have bus drivers, we couldn't operate the service, we wanted to create as much social distancing for our frontline staff as possible. So we moved to a fare-free service, and we've been operating fare-free since March 2020. That allowed backdoor boarding. So when folks boarded the bus, you know, there was 6 feet separation from the drivers, and, you know, we were able to staff for the most part of the pandemic. So we've been fare-free for about 2.5 years. Our board adopted our FY24 operating budget this morning, we are planning on resuming fare collection on July 1st.
Well, that's interesting. I don't think I realized that the initial reason for going fare-free was a social distancing concern.
Yeah, initially it was really to protect our drivers and make sure that we had staffing through the pandemic. Luckily, we did receive a significant amount of COVID relief funds from the federal government. And so as the pandemic continued, it did allow us to have the revenue to continue the zero fare, which morphed into more of a public benefit than a safety consideration. And then luckily, last year through legislative support, we received funding through the transportation bill. And that's how we're able to continue the zero fare service this fiscal year.
Okay. Now, prior to the pandemic, what role did fares play in the budget? Like, were buses able to kind of pay for themselves based solely on fares alone?
No, there's really no public transit system in America, even including the big cities, that fully pay for themselves in fare revenue. For GMT, for a system our size, we've always done pretty well and roughly generated about 15% to 20% of our overall operating budget from our fare revenue.
Okay. And how much were people paying to ride the bus prior to the pandemic?
So pre-pandemic, it was $1.50 on the Chittenden County local routes, and we did have a 75-cent discount fare for folks that qualified.
Okay. So as we just learned, the board voted early this morning to officially reinstate these fares. Can you tell me a little bit about, why that is necessary now?
Well, generally speaking, from a financial perspective, our goal as an agency was to provide as much public good as possible, and we see that being achieved through providing as much service as we can. Certainly a lot of value in the zero fare service and making our transportation services more accessible. But the reality of the situation today is without that $2 million that we have budgeted for next fiscal year in fare collection, we'd have to cut $2 million in service, and that's about 11% of our overall budget. And we felt the trade-off was worth going back to fare collection to make sure we could maintain as much of our service as possible.
Hmm. Now, listeners, if you're just tuning in this hour, we're discussing public transit options around the state. Right now, we are speaking with John Moore of Green Mountain Transit about the potential change of the bus lines going from fare-free to a reinstated fare, perhaps as soon as this summer. If you've taken the bus in Chittenden County, give us a call. We'd love to hear about your experiences and how you feel about the change in fares. Will a fare increase or the return of fares at all cause you to not ride the bus anymore, or will you continue to rely upon it? Give us a call, 800-639-2211. Again, that's 800-639-2211. Now, John, as you mentioned, last year the state legislature came in and provided funding so that the buses could remain fare-free. What are conversations like this year? Does that seem like it might be a possibility again?
Well, we hope so. We haven't started those conversations in depth. I will note that Green Mountain Transit recently hired a new general manager, Clayton Clark. Clayton comes from the Human Services and has a background in state government. So we are planning on furthering those conversations this legislative session. And GMT really needs to solve both our short-term funding challenges, but also a more long-term sustainable funding model for transit. So we definitely want to start those conversations and continue those conversations at the state level.
So a long-term funding model, what would that look like?
Well, the Chittenden County Regional Planning Commission, luckily, has recently drafted a study on what that looks like. So generally speaking, the federal government provides 50% of the funding for transit services, and there's a 50% non-federal match required. In Vermont, VTrans and the state are great partners, and they provide more funding than probably any other rural state. But there is still about a 20% requirement from local communities, which generally comes from the property tax, and we all know that that is relied on already. So this statewide study looks at new revenue generation options, which would replace the reliance on the property tax, would allow state transit properties to maximize the increased investment in federal funds while possibly continuing the zero fare service. So it would provide a more predictable and stable revenue source. And from GMT's perspective, we operate a regional service, but it's funded locally. More of a statewide funding source would allow for some more common sense planning decisions and service delivery.
Okay. And so just to be sure I'm understanding what you're saying, there's a reliance right now on revenue from property taxes in order to fund a lot of these public service or public transit options. But as I'm sure many Vermonters can attest, the thought of property taxes rising even more than they already have is not something people are going to be very excited about.
Yeah, agreed. And so the study looks at seven different ways to generate that revenue, none of which involve increases to the property tax. It would be through other options. And we're also working with our private partners, so we're always looking for that public-private partnership. We have some really great institutional partners and some private businesses in our seasonal services. So we want to continue those conversations and try to maximize that private investment into transit.
Okay. Well, I want to bring in one more voice into this conversation. We have Ross McDonald with us with the Vermont Agency of Transportation. He's the program manager for public transit at the state agency. Ross, welcome. Ross, do we have you?
Yes, you do. Thank you, McKenna.
Hi. Well, thanks for joining us. So as you've heard John and I talking about some of these larger systemic long-term funding questions, what are you thinking? What are your priorities for making sure that the public transit is well-funded, not just in the near term this year, but farther along into the future?
Sure. We're seeing the same data and cost increases that John and GMT is seeing throughout the system. And in Vermont, we have seven public transit providers covering all towns, if not with fixed route traditional service, then certainly with our demand response service, which is that dial-a-ride service for essential services and healthcare that does reach into all of our communities. Right now, as John had mentioned, the state it supports public transit to a degree that very few rural states, if any, can match. We're able to provide additional funds into the public transit budget from our FHWA, our federal highway funds, our bridge and road money. Some of that is transferred to the public transit budget. We also invest significant state funds as well. So all told, in Vermont, we're able to already provide a level of service that most rural states don't see. But we certainly know it's not enough for everybody to get where they need to get to. So it all comes down to priorities and covering our larger towns and our larger corridors with traditional transit is generally occurring. And we're trying to fill in those gaps with demand response services for our elderly, persons with disability, Medicaid. All of those demand response trips are provided through the local regional transit operators. For the costs, it's a never-ending challenge to analyze, assess, and to try to do more and different and better services with our current funding. Over the last few difficult years with COVID, with ridership impacts, cleaning costs going up, we have been able to sustain the services that are currently on the road and are looking to do so through FY24 with the current funding model in place, which is going to towns and seeking their assistance to help pay for some of that non-federal match to get these services out on the road.
Well, let's go to the phone lines. We have a question from Matt in Swanton. Matt, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, good afternoon. I was, thank you. I was wondering the $2 million, I think it was, on the free fare and whatnot, do we have any idea what the impact on ridership might have been? I mean, if it's free, did we see people take more advantage? And do we have any idea whether that $2 million is well spent or is in showing an increase in participation?
Yeah, great question, Matt. That was on my list too. John Moore with Green Mountain Transit.
Sure, great question. And first, I should clarify that the $2 million is just for the Chittenden County fares. Our fiscal year 2024 operating budget does assume that our rural service areas will continue fare-free in fiscal year 24. In Chittenden County, there's been some projections done. There's a legislative study that will be presented to this session. The impacts of going back to a fare equates to about 340,000 boardings. So it is a significant ridership impact. When people have to pay, they're going to ride less. And so that projection is about 340,000 less boardings if we go back to charging a fare on July 1st.
Wow, that seems significant. 340,000 less boardings.
Yeah, that's out of a total projected ridership of about 2.3 million. So it is sizable.
Interesting. Well, we have some more questions coming in. And listeners, if you have questions about public transit in the state and specifically about the potential return of fares to buses in Chittenden County, that's what we're talking about right now. Give us a call, 800-639-2211. Let's go next to Charles in Wilmington. Charles, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Kayla. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think that in the brave little Marxist socialist state of Vermont, public transportation should always be free to all the comrades. Thank you.
Well, thanks for your comment, Charles. Ross McDonald, Charles does make a point. A lot of folks say that, you know, public transit, the right to, the ability to be able to get where you need to go within your budget should be a universal right. Is that something that the state is considering or that you could see being feasible in the short term?
Well, it has been feasible in the short term with COVID relief funds. It's a little different in the rural area. And as John has made the distinction between the urban area in Burlington versus the rural area, which is the rest of the state, as identified by our federal funders, is quite different. It's about a $450,000, $500,000 total fare revenues that come in from all the services outside of Chittenden County. And so if you look at 2.2 million in a robust service area like Burlington, that's a bigger impact in percentage than it is in the rural area. Our rural areas and those six providers other than GMT We already have two that were fare free before COVID. We also had resort routes and routes that were being subsidized by healthcare and different resorts that meant that about a third of the full service before COVID was already fare free. We also need to take a look at what it costs for fares, generally speaking, a dollar or less. In the rural system, they don't have the robust system to allow folks to live without their cars generally. And so in Vermont, we're looking at 3 to 6% of the overall cost of transit coming from fares in the rural areas. And so we're able to cover the fare loss for the rural system differently than GMT. And as a result, we can expect to see fare-free service outside of Chittenden County through FY24. Concurrent to that is watching the costs and trying to maintain those services in a sustainable way.
Now, I'd like to shift here for a moment away from just the Chittenden County bus fares and towards some other public transit options that are being piloted throughout the state, specifically microtransit. It's a phrase we keep hearing more and more, and I think a lot of folks still don't know exactly what it is. So, Ross, can you explain what a microtransit option might look like?
Sure. Microtransit is an on-demand public transit service, meaning that rather than having a fixed route serving a route, we have buses that are serving a predetermined region so that people can use their phones, almost like an Uber or Lyft type service, to request trips from wherever they are to wherever they want to go in that region. What that allows for is a potential more services to more people for more purposes. Those regions can include schools and businesses and hospitals, essential shopping, those types of things. And because we already have our demand response service, as I mentioned, serving the elders and persons with disability and Medicaid clients, this allows us to bring everybody onto the same infrastructure and the same process in a nod toward an equitable delivery of service.
Well, John, Green Mountain Transit runs a microtransit pilot program in Montpelier, the first in the state, as I understand it. How has that project been going so far?
Sure. So we've been operating that My Ride by GMT service for about 2 years now. And we took three existing fixed route services. And as Ross mentioned, the My Ride is now just a predefined zone where if you're traveling anywhere within that zone, you can either go on your smartphone and request a ride through an application, or you can call our call center. And generally speaking, it's gone very well. It's been well received. We've worked very closely with the community and some key stakeholders to make sure that folks that may not have access to the technology or may have more difficulty with change, that they're still being served. So overall, even though we rolled it out during the worldwide pandemic, it's been a success in our mind, and always looking at improving the services and make it more accessible. One recent issue that we've had is a staffing challenge and limited capacity. So as of yesterday, actually, we were able to add a third bus. So we're hopeful for folks that are trying to request a ride and they're seeing capacity issues that those will go away as we're able to hire more drivers.
Yeah, and let's put a pin in that conversation about staffing because I have a couple more questions for you on it. But first, let's go back to the phones with Kate in Marshfield. Kate, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to say that my big issue is I wouldn't mind paying a fare if there was more coverage. You know, mostly I want to go to Montpelier. I live in Marshfield, and Montpelier and St. Jay are the places I'd like to go most. Usually I can't make the connections. It stops too early. There's, you know, there's just not enough range of service to be able to do much outside of the very middle of the day at working hours. And so that's my thing. I'd rather pay a fare. Now, put that in perspective, I do own a car. I'm not, you know, poverty stricken. I don't have to ride a bus, but I'd rather.
Okay, I don't want to be driving my car, especially at a discretionary trip. I'd like to be able to take the bus, but right. I usually can't figure out the timing.
Right. Well, thank you for your call, Kate. And I'm guessing there are lots of folks in Kate's situation, maybe who aren't taking the bus because it's a financial necessity, but they would like to rely more on public transit than on individual cars. John, what would you say to somebody like Kate about the lack of connections?
Well, there is a real demand for these services, even for folks that may have other options. And the reality of it is that fixed route service needs density to be successful. And in a lot of places in Vermont, there's just not that density. So the old paradigm of a 35-foot bus, you know, traveling between Montpelier and St. Johnsbury, you know, may not be the most efficient way to provide that service. And that's where MyRide and some other innovative service models come into play. For example, we're partnering with a nonprofit in Barrie, Capstone, to provide some more general public demand response. So instead of, you know, having to plan your day around, you know, two round trips in the morning and two in the afternoon on a fixed route bus, maybe there's a more cost-effective way to provide that service with a volunteer driver or a electric sedan. So we're looking at ways to expand service offerings, but do it in a more non-traditional transit setting and trying to match our services with what that demand is. And we think there's a more cost-effective and convenient way to provide that service.
A volunteer driver.
Correct. So in Vermont, especially for the Medicaid program and the Elders and Disabled program, about 50% of those trips are actually provided with volunteer drivers. There is a lack of volunteer drivers, and I think Ross may put a plug in for this later, but a lot of the transportation network in Vermont is supplied through volunteer drivers. And so we want to build upon that and look at other cost-effective ways to increase transportation options in the state.
Well, Ross, let's give you that space to do the plug right now, because I think a lot of folks might not realize that, as I certainly didn't, that volunteer drivers are part of the core of drivers.
Absolutely critical to the overall transit system are our volunteer drivers. For them to use their own vehicles and be reimbursed on a mileage basis allows more professional drivers and more of our buses out there serving our fixed routes and those who need wheelchair lifts and the like. It's also a very efficient way to provide those trips when we reimburse just on the government reimbursement rate, which now stands at 65 cents per mile. We're actually launching a program called Community Drivers. And to be a community driver, it can range from starting out as a volunteer driver, maybe becoming a paid non-commercial driver, or a CDL driver is what many of our professional operators are as they drive those fixed routes. And so we're inviting anyone interested to go to the GoVermont site, govermont.org, and to look up your local regional provider and contact them or fill out a quick form to really try to figure out what are those options for you to be part of this transit system. Volunteer, hourly with your car. Your regional provider may have some options for you to consider. We're also hopeful that that really can help with this lack of professional drivers that we have in our system, where if you start driving as a volunteer or a non-commercial driver license position, it may spur some interest to becoming a CDL driver for our fixed routes. And most of our providers will provide assistance for you to get your commercial driver's license. And so you may see ads in the next few months. We're hoping to build back up our volunteers and community drivers to refill the gap that COVID really created when we lost a significant percentage of our volunteers due to the risks and concerns around COVID.
Sure. Yeah. And John, I know that the staffing shortages have been a major issue for GMT recently too.
They have. So we're trying to get creative in filling non-CDL positions where possible. To Ross's point, we will train folks that don't have commercial driving experience. We provide excellent benefits and excellent pay. So if anyone's interested in a potential professional driving job, I'd ask they go to our website.
Well, let's turn back to this concept of microtransit, which we started out this segment with, because we have another voice joining us from southeastern Vermont, from the Southeast Vermont Transit. Randy Schoonmaker is the CEO of Southeast Vermont Transit, which is the public service provider for Windham and Southern Windsor counties. And as I understand it, they have a microtransit project launching in Windsor next Monday. So, Randy, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
So tell me a bit about what this new project is going to look like. What can the folks of Windsor expect?
So Windsor is a town that does not have any fixed route service now, so it's a blank slate for us to work with. They have a hospital, they have industry, they have congregate housing, high school. So they have a great array of potential for public transit service, in specifically microtransit. So our service will be 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. And similar to John's, you'll call our office, you'll use an app, or you can go online and make a reservation. And during those hours, we'll take anybody anywhere they need to go within the town boundaries of Windsor.
Mm. And what are the ridership goals? Do you have any idea of how many folks you're expecting will be using this?
This is going to be tough to estimate. We're thinking we'll do probably 20, 30, 40 rides a day. Hard to say. We have the capacity to bring more people onto the bus than just one person. So we hope that the software will combine rides for us. But really, because it's a whole new service in a town that doesn't have anything now, ridership is really up in the air as to how much we're going to do.
Sure. And let's talk cost here, too. Can you reiterate like how much rides are going to cost?
Well, the service itself is free to riders. Ross has given us a grant to operate the service, so we don't have to solicit local funds from the town or from our riders. But at a cost per hour basis, again, because it's so new, it would be really hard to predict what that's going to be.
Sure, sure. And Ross, this project in Windsor is just one of many microtransit projects that the state is piloting. What are some of the other ones?
Sure. We're looking at a wide array of communities, including Manchester, Barry, Rutland, and Morrisville, in addition to Windsor. And what we wanted to do was respond to all the interest that we were getting from all of our regional providers and towns throughout our state about answering the question of when is microtransit coming to us. What we were able to do is conduct 12 feasibility studies, working with our providers and asking them to identify the one or two communities they would like to study the potential of microtransit service. And as a result, are going to fund these pilots for the next 3 years to try to identify how best to implement microtransit in Vermont. Is it in a town like Barry, getting people to and from existing fixed route services? Is it areas like Windsor and providing new service that would otherwise be covered with demand response dialer ride services anyway? Or in the case of Montpelier, as John had mentioned, replacing three buses on three routes to better serve a larger service region. So that's why we chose those different communities, really trying to figure out what that sweet spot is for Vermont.
And then, Randy, other than this big microtransit project that's launching next week, what else is going on at your transit agency in 2023? Give us the look forward.
We have 32 routes, fixed routes that we offer right now in our service area. And during the wintertime, we do a lot of resort work with Okemo, Stratton, and Mount Snow. We're also one of the largest Medicaid providers in the state. So year-round, there's a healthy mix of fixed routes, Medicaid, demand response, elderly and disabled transportation. So we're continuing to try to expand routes. We've been successful in having resorts support our services. So So that's really what's happening in our neck of the woods.
All right. Well, Randy Schoonmaker, CEO of Southeast Vermont Transit, thanks so much for calling in today.
Thank you.
Well, let's go back to the phone lines. We have a call from Liz in Burlington. Liz, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you. Hey, John. Hey, Ross. I'm sorry I tuned in a little late, so you may have covered this. I'm just curious about the about operating funds and possibilities for, you know, Vermont-based new funding sources. Was there, I believe there was a study done. Was there any findings around, like, municipal authority to do car registration, local registration or local permitting or something like that? I'm just curious about, you know, kind of the loss of operating funds at the federal level if commuter routes decreased in ridership from the urban system and the impact of that and other possibilities for revenue. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Liz. John, can you kind of reiterate for us what the revenue situation is right now for GMT?
Sure. Nice to hear from you, Liz. So I did briefly mention that there's the CCRPC statewide transit financing study, and that does look at different ways to generate non-federal match to support transit services in Vermont. I will say that study had a goal of generating $21 million. So that would be the existing non-federal match between local and state funds provided today, plus about a $5 million increase to help leverage the increase in federal funds to the Infrastructure and Jobs Act. So hopefully that would actually allow us to expand service statewide and continue the zero fare transit. So that is on the GMT website as well as the CCRPC website. So if folks are interested, they can definitely see the document there.
Thanks. Well, let's go to John in Montpelier next. John, you're on the air. What's your question or your comment?
Yeah, I just want to share my experience as a really happy link, Montpelier to Burlington link rider. I ride the bus every day up to Burlington. It's my most productive 45 minutes of the day on each side of my work day. I have my laptop on my lap. There's Wi-Fi on that bus. I get a ton done during that bus ride. And I will say that I certainly appreciate that it's fare free, but I think most important, as the caller from Marshfield said, is retaining good service options. And so I would certainly be willing to pay a fare to retain a really good schedule, a really flexible schedule. I find that because some of these buses are express, they don't stop in Richmond and Waterbury, I'm actually faster taking the bus than I am driving door to door. And there's a ton of options in the morning and the afternoon for starting and ending my day. And so just really, it's a mystery to me why more people aren't taking the bus. It's a really great resource and just want to really appreciate GMT and the service that they provide.
Oh, well, thanks for the call, John. John Moore, we got a happy customer for you.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, the thanks go to our frontline staff and all of the GMT staff and really do a great job of providing this public service. And glad to hear that service is working out for you. I will say that we did a very robust public outreach process for our budget presentation and some service reductions included in that. And the general sentiment really was that people want more service and preferably have it be free. And, you know, we want to achieve that, but we also need to do that within the realistic budgetary constraints that we have. So our goal is to provide as much service as possible, and we hope to work with our partners to be able to do so.
Right. And listeners, if you have a question about public transit or, like our last caller, have a experience either positive or negative that you'd like to share, give us a call. We'd love to hear from you this hour. 800-639-2211. Let's go next to Kurt McCormick in Burlington. Kurt, welcome back to the Vermont Tradition.
Hi, Michaela.
Hi there. What's your question or your comment today?
Okay, well, my comment, you know, as former chair of the Transportation Committee in the House,
yes.
We've been working on getting fare free for the last, I think it's 3 years in a row now. And frankly, it's a bit like pulling teeth when it comes to the GMT board to get on board, so to speak, even though it's so important here in Burlington compared to any other place in the state. And an elephant in the room here, a little elephant in the room, would be that the Agency of Transportation, you know, not hearing from other transportation agencies around the state, the other six or seven that we have, not hearing from them that they want to bring back fares because they don't. It's in the transportation budget now. The Agency of Transportation budget, they'll be proposing that we have fare free statewide, except for Burlington. And I think the reason for that is that the DMT board seems to be bent on bringing back fares. And I wish they would work closely with the legislature and work on getting money for fare free statewide, including Burlington, every year.
Well, thanks for your call, Kurt. Again, Kurt McCormick is the former chair of the House Transportation Committee, and I know is a big advocate for going fare-free, in part for climate concerns. John, can you address Kurt's concern that the board is not willing to consider going fare-free?
Yeah, first of all, I want to thank Kurt for all of his past support for transit in Vermont. Secondly, I would say that the GMT board generally does support zero fare transit. But like the last caller, John, if we have to decide and make a tough choice between providing as much service as we can or offering a fare-free service, there's a general thought that we should use that money or lack of money and maintain as much service as we can. So if the legislature was to appropriate more money in the transportation bill for GMT to continue zero fare service in fiscal year 2024, our board would be ecstatic.
All right. And Ross McDonald, the public transit program manager at the Agency of Transportation, also love your thoughts here.
Sure. Fare free has been in place for a few years. And in the rural area, we do expect to maintain fare-free service. In Burlington, because there's a more robust service, many people are able to live without a vehicle. It does seem that the economies of scale support and make it an understandable move to move to fares in our urban system. And at this time, with costs increasing due to fuel, new labor rates and the like, we can understand GMT moving to fares in the urban area while we continue to strive to maintain fare-free service in the rural areas.
But it sounds like what some climate activists are saying is that you know, yes, this is a cost-effective measure to bring back fares, but really it's a moral imperative if we're going to try to meet our climate goals to try to make public transit as accessible as possible.
Sure. There's a lot of goals that transit addresses: economic development, essential services for those who are transit dependent or mobility dependent, tourism. All of these things need to be considered as best we can. What we did not see was an appreciable uptick in ridership due to fare free. What we did see were a more predictable service. It was an operational efficiency to not be charging fares to people who are getting on the bus, maybe with the right change or not, those types of things. And as a result, because in the rural area, we don't have a robust fixed route service, we feel maintaining that those operational and financial efficiencies are worth it. A different calculation in the urban area, no question.
And we're going to dive right back into the phone line, see how many of you we can sneak in before the end of the hour. And we'll start with Patty in Essextown. Patty, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi. For John and the last two or three callers, they were great. I just wanted to say, as a parent, my husband and I have a 30-year-old, and I wanted to give you a millennial view. Okay, my
sure.
daughter's a millennial. She worked at Dealer for 7 years, and a lot of millennials work there, and many of our millennials have left the state. I do. My background is research. But anyway, so I did some research, and a group of millennials went to VTrans. they went to the board of V-Trans and they demanded that you need to preserve Vermont's environment and you need to provide more access to public transportation, because we're a generation, even if we have money, even if we want to drive our car, we choose not to. And if you had more walkable communities, I'm located in Essex Town. Essex Town and Essex Junction together is the second largest municipality. Millennials have fled because right. they want to be able to go on their app. They want to be able to get that small little bus or little van and access public transportation because...
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you, Patty. I'm sorry to cut you off there, but I do think we get your point about the importance of public transportation and of walkability to millennials. But I want to make sure we also get in a question from Bill in Guilford. Bill, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, hello. I just wondered if anyone has looked into converting the transportation modes to electric vehicles. It seems like one of the better uses of a regular everyday route where you bring the vehicle back to the same place every night and you charge it. And it seems like it's getting double benefit if you can expand public transportation but make it part of the state's move towards reducing petroleum products. That would seem like a no-brainer to me.
Sure.
And the other thing I quickly want to say is there's no such thing as a free fare. And to call it that is lying to people because someone is paying for it.
Mm. Well, thanks for your call, Bill. And Ross McDonald with Vermont's Agency of Transportation, would love for you to address Bill's question about converting more buses to electric.
Sure. And to back up real quick, we call services that are not charging fare, zero fare services, understanding that all those costs are being borne by federal and state and local dollars. As far as the electrification process, I am happy to report that we've received funding for 27 e-buses over the last 6 years and are actively working with the Federal Transit Administration and its testing process to identify better options as we bring on more electric buses to replace our diesel and gas vehicles. A good example of how we're scaling up. We started with 2 or 3 per award on our annual opportunity to apply for those e-buses to this year where we received 9 vehicles. And we will be continuing to scale up our facilities at our public transit public transit regions to bring on more. The VW funds are still in play to a degree, and we've signed a memorandum with the Department of Environmental Conservation to partially use those funds for the non-federal match for up to 25 larger buses. And so that's another 25 on top of the 27 vehicles that have already been awarded. We're still waiting for some better models to come out onto the market, but are responding in an aggressive way to electrify to the extent practical.
Okay. Well, let's go next to Daniel in Middlebury. Daniel, you're on the air. What's your question or your comment?
Yes, thank you. Good morning. I'd like to say that the state of Vermont did assist me in receiving my Class A CDL through the Vermont Truck Driver Training School in 93 from Howard Marcel in Pittsford. And from that, I was able to obtain a job with a government career, go through 20, 30 years and, put money back into the system and also send children to UVM. But what I'd like to say, just as an offer an idea, I watched the bus system expand in Burlington. Ridership is up. Yes, it's free. It should remain free. And I know why, because people, the tax disparity, those who don't have and those who have. And this is an idea between all the sales and the liquor that happened during the pandemic. You put that in one category, money you probably can't touch, but the attorneys that are receiving these large sums to represent people who are pulled over by the state and local sheriffs and police for the DWIs, I say we tax those attorneys on that money that they're receiving, that the state is beginning the process, and on the other end, they should be able to receive funding from that to go towards more free ridership.
I like the creative thinking, Daniel. I'm guessing that might not be feasible this year, but John, can you talk us again through what some of these funding options might be? If people are maybe holding out hope that that the buses in Chittenden County might stay zero fare.
Well, I would generally say if you value zero fare service or you generally want to see a higher investment into transit, contact your local representative. Let them know how you value transit in Chittenden County and the state. And take a look at that statewide transit financing study. And again, we'll look to advance that in the legislature this year to try to find a more sustainable funding model.
All right. Well, thank you, John. And Ross, final thoughts for you. For folks who have been listening and want to advocate for more public transit options in their community, what would you say are our next steps?
Sure. Well, we welcome everyone to try transit, however that reveals itself in your communities. If we have a few buses in your community, we have empty seats, and the best way to justify an expansion of services is to fill those empty seats. We have our demand response or dial-a-ride trips for people who are elderly, disabled, or have who are on Medicaid. Your best option would be to contact your regional public transit provider to see what you're eligible for, as well as to check out GoVermont. GoVermont is a one-click, one-call resource for all transportation options in the state. All local bus routes and schedules are there. We have an app for automated vehicle location, meaning that all 123 routes are captured on this real-time app application, which shows you where your bus is coming and when it's going to be getting to its final destination, Amtrak schedules. All of those things can be found at GoVermont, carpool matching, van pools, all of those things to help folks reduce the travel in their own vehicles on their own. So that would be a good place to start, which is use the system that's in place now.
All right. Well, we're going to have to leave it there for today. Ross McDonald is the Public Transit Program Manager at Vermont's Agency of Transportation, and John Moore is Green Mountain Transit's Assistant General Manager. Thanks to you both for joining us today.